Audio Renaissance presents 12 Sharp by Janet Ivanovich, read for you by Lorelei King. Chapter 1. When I was 12 years old, I accidentally substituted salt for sugar in a cake recipe. I baked the cake, iced the cake, and served it up. It looked like a cake, but as soon as you cut into it and took a taste, you knew something else was going on. People are like that too. Sometimes you just can't tell what's on the inside from looking at the outside. Sometimes people are a big surprise, just like the salt cake. Sometimes a surprise turns out to be good, and sometimes a surprise turns out to be bad. And sometimes the surprise is just friggin' confusing. Joe Morelli is one of those good surprises. He's 2 years older than I am, and for most of my school years, spending time with Morelli was like a visit to the dark side, alluring and frightening. He's a Trenton cop now, and he's my off-again, on-again boyfriend. He used to be the hair-raising part of my life, but my life has had a lot of changes, and now he's the normal part. He has a dog named Bob, and a nice little house, and a toaster. On the outside, Morelli is still street-tough and dangerously alluring. On the inside, Morelli is now the sexy guy with the toaster. Go figure. I have a hamster named Rex, a utilitarian apartment, and my toaster is broken. My name is Stephanie Plum, and I work as a bond enforcement agent, also known as a bounty hunter, for my cousin Vinny. It's not a great job, but it has its moments, and if I mooch food off my parents, the job almost pays enough to get me through the month. It would pay a lot more, but the truth is, I'm not all that good at it. Sometimes I moonlight for a guy named Ranger, who's extremely bad in an incredibly good way. He's a security expert and a bounty hunter, and he moves like smoke. Ranger is milk chocolate on the outside, a delicious, tempting, forbidden pleasure. And no one knows what's on the inside. Ranger keeps his own counsel. I work with two women I like a lot. Connie Rizzoli is Vinny's office manager and junkyard dog. She's a little older than I am. A little smarter, a little tougher, a little more Italian. She's got a lot more chest, and she dresses like Betty Boop. The other woman is my sometimes partner, Lula. Lula was, at this moment, parading around in the bail bonds office, showing Connie and me her new outfit. Lula is a way-beyond-voluptuous black woman who is currently squashed into 4-inch spike heels and a sparkly gold spandex dress that had been constructed for a much smaller woman. The neckline was low, and the only thing keeping Lula's big boobs from popping out was the fact that the material was snagged on her nipples. The skirt was stretched tight across her ass and hung 2 inches below the full moon. With Connie and Lula, you get what you see. Lula bent to take a look at the heel on her shoe, and Connie was treated to a view of the night sky.
"Crikey," Connie said. "You need to put some underwear on."
"I got underwear on," Lula said. "I'm wearing my best thong. Just 'cause I used to be a hoe don't mean I'm cheap. Problem is, that little thong stringy gets lost in all my derriere."
"Tell me again what you're doing in this getup," Connie said.
"I'm gonna be a rock and roll singer. I got a gig singing with Sally Sweet's new band. You heard of the Who? Well, we're gonna be the what."
"You can't sing," Connie said. "I've heard you sing. You can't hold a tune to Happy Birthday."
"The hell I can't," Lula said. "I can sing your ass off. Besides, half those rock stars can't sing. They just open their big oversized mouths and yell. And you gotta admit, I look good in this here dress. Nobody gonna be paying attention to my singing when I'm wearing this dress."
"She's got a point," I said to Connie.
"No argument," Connie said.
"I'm underrealized," Lula said. "I got a lot of untapped potential. Yesterday my horoscope said I gotta expand my horizons."
"You expand any more in that dress and you'll get yourself arrested," Connie said.
The bonds office is on Hamilton Avenue, a couple blocks from St. Francis Hospital. Handy for bonding out guys who've been shot. It's a small storefront office sandwiched between a beauty parlor and a used bookstore. There's an outer room with a scarred imitation leather couch, a couple folding chairs, Connie's desk and computer, and a bank of files. Vinny's office is located in a room behind Connie's desk. When I started working for Vinny, he used his office to talk to his bookie and set up nooners with barnyard animals. But Vinny has recently discovered the internet, and now Vinny uses his office to surf porn sites and online casinos.
Behind the bank of file cabinets is a storeroom filled with the nuts and bolts of the bail bonds business. Confiscated televisions, DVD players, iPods, computers, a velvet painting of Elvis, a set of cookware, blenders, kids' bikes, engagement rings, a tricked-out hog, a bunch of George Foreman grills, and God knows what else. Vinny had some guns and ammo back there, too, plus a box of cuffs that he got on eBay. There's a small bathroom that Connie keeps spotless, and a back door in case there's a need to sneak off.
I hate to be a party pooper, Connie said, but we're going to have to put the fashion show on hold because we have a problem.
She slid a stack of folders across her desk at me.
These are all unresolved skips. If we don't find some of these guys, we're going belly up.
Here's the way bail bonds works. If you're accused of a crime and you don't want to sit and rot in jail while you're waiting for your trial to come up, you can give the court a wad of money. The court takes the money and lets you walk, and you get the money back when you show up on your trial date. If you don't have that money stashed under your mattress, a bail bondsman can give the court the money on your behalf. He'll charge you a percentage of the money, maybe 10%, and he'll keep that percentage whether you're proven guilty or not. If the accused shows up for court, the court gives the bail bondsman his money back. If the accused doesn't show up, the court keeps the money until the bondsman finds the accused and drags his sorry butt back to jail. So you see the problem, right? Too much money going out and not enough money going in, and Vinny might have to refinance his house. Or worse, the insurance company that backs Vinny could yank the plug. Lula and I can't keep up with the skips, I said to Connie. There are too many of them.
Yeah, and I'll tell you the problem, Lula said. It used to be Ranger work full-time for you, but anymore he's got his own security business going, and he's not doing skip tracing. It's just Stephanie and me catching the bad guys these days.
It was true. Ranger had moved most of his business toward the security side, and only went into tracking mode when something came in that was over my head. There are some who might argue everything is over my head, but for practical purposes, we've had to ignore that argument. I hate to say this, I told Connie, but you need to hire another bond enforcement person.
It's not that easy, Connie said. Remember when we had Joyce Barnhart working here? That was a disaster. She screwed up all her busts doing her big bad bounty hunter routine, and then she stole everyone's skips. It's not like she's a team player.
Joyce Barnhart is my archenemy. I went all through school with her, and she was a misery. And before the ink was dry on my marriage license, she was in bed with my husband, who is now my ex-husband. Thank you, Joyce.
We could put an ad in the paper, Lula said. That's how I got my filing job here. Look at how good that turned out.
Connie and I did eye rolls. Lula was about the worst file clerk ever. Lula kept her job because no one else would tolerate Vinny. The first time Vinny made a grab at Lula, she clocked him on the side of the head with a 5-pound phone book and told him she'd staple his nuts to the wall if he didn't show respect. And that was the end of sexual harassment in the bail bonds office. Connie read the names off the files on her desk.
Lonnie Johnson, Kevin Gallagher, Leon James, Doobie Biagi, Caroline Scarzoli, Melvin Pickle, Charles Chin, Bernard Brown, Mary Lee Truck, Luis Queen, John Santos. These are all current. You already have half of them. The rest came in last night. Plus, we have 9 outstanding that we've relegated to the temporarily lost cause file. Vinny's writing a lot of bond these days, probably taking risks he shouldn't. The result is more than the normal FTAs.
When someone doesn't show up for a court appearance, we call them FTA, failure to appear. People fail to appear for a bunch of reasons. Hookers and pushers can make more money on the street than they can in jail, so they only show up in court when you finally stop bonding them out. All other people just don't want to go to jail. Connie gave me the new files, and it was like an elephant was sitting on my chest. Lonnie Johnson was wanted for armed robbery. Leon James was suspected of arson and attempted murder. Kevin Gallagher was wanted for grand theft auto. Mary Lee Truck had inserted a carving knife into her husband's left buttock during a domestic disturbance. And Melvin Pickle was caught with his pants down in the 3rd row of the multiplex. Lula was looking over my shoulder, reading along with me.
Melvin Pickle sounds like fun, she said. I think we should start with Melvin.
Maybe a bond enforcement agent wanted ad in the paper isn't such a bad idea, I said to Connie.
Yeah, Lula said. Just be careful how you word it. You probably want to fib a little. Like, you don't want to say we're looking for some gun-happy lunatic to take down a bunch of scumbags.
I'll keep that in mind when I write it up, Connie said.
I'm going down the street, I told Lula. I need something to make me happy. We'll go to work when I get back.
You going to the drugstore?
Lula wanted to know. No, the bakery.
I wouldn't mind if you brought me back one of them cream-filled donuts with the chocolate frosting, Lula said. I need to get happy, too.
At mid-morning, the Garden State was heating up. Pavement was steaming under a cloudless sky. Petrochemical plants were spewing to the north, and cars were emitting hydrocarbons statewide. By mid-afternoon, I'd feel the toxic stew catch in the back of my throat, and I'd know it was truly summer in Jersey. For me, the stew is part of the Jersey experience. The stew has attitude, and it enhances the pull of Point Pleasant. How can you completely appreciate the Jersey Shore if the air is safe to breathe in the interior parts of the state? I swung into the bakery and went straight for the donut case. Marjorie Lando was behind the counter filling cannoli for a customer. Fine by me, I could wait my turn. The bakery was always a soothing experience. My heart rate slowed in the presence of massive quantities of sugar and lard. My mind floated over the acres of cookies and cakes and donuts and cream pies topped with rainbow sprinkles, chocolate frosting, whipped cream, and meringue. I was patiently contemplating my donut selection when I sensed a familiar presence behind me. A hand brushed my hair back, and Ranger leaned into me and kissed me on the nape of my neck.
I could get you to look at me like that if I had 5 minutes alone with you, Ranger said.
I'll give you 5 minutes alone with me if you'll take over half my skips.
Tempting, Ranger said.
But I'm on my way to the airport, and I'm not sure when I'll be back. Tank is in charge. Call him if you need help, and let him know if you decide to move into my apartment.
Not that long ago, I needed a safe place to stay and sort of commandeered Ranger's apartment when he was out of town. Ranger had come home and found me sleeping in his bed like Goldilocks. He'd very graciously not thrown me out the 7th floor window, and in fact, he'd allowed me to stay with a minimum of sexual harassment. Okay, maybe minimum isn't entirely accurate. Maybe it was a 7 on a scale of 10, but he hadn't forced the issue. How did you know I was here? I asked him.
I stopped at the bonds office, and Lula told me you were on a donut mission.
Where are you going?
Miami.
Is this business or pleasure?
It's bad business.
Marjorie finished with her customer and made her way over to me.
What'll it be?
She wanted to know. 12 Boston cream donuts.
Babe,
Ranger said.
They're not all for me.
Ranger doesn't often smile. Mostly he thinks about smiling. And this was one of those thinking smile times. He wrapped his hand around my wrist, pulled me to him, and kissed me. The kiss was warm and short. No tongue in front of the bakery lady, thank God. He turned and walked away. Tank was idling at the curb in a black SUV. Ranger got in, and they drove off. Marjorie was behind the counter with a cardboard box in her hand, and her mouth dropped open.
Wow,
she said. That dragged a sigh out of me because she was right. Ranger was definitely a wow. He stood half a head taller than me. He was perfectly toned muscle, and he had classic Latino good looks. He always smelled great. He dressed only in black. His skin was dark. His eyes were dark. His hair was dark. His life was dark. Ranger had lots of secrets.
It's a work relationship, I told Marjorie. If he was in here any longer, the chocolate would have melted off the eclairs.
I don't like this, Lula said. I want her to go after the pervert. I personally think it's a bad choice to go after the guy who likes guns.
He's got the highest bond. The fastest way to dig Vinny out of the hole is to get the guy with the highest bond. We were in Lula's Red Firebird, sitting across the street from Lonnie Johnson's last known address. It was a small clapboard bungalow in a depressed neighborhood that backed up to the hockey arena. It was close to noon and not a great time to roust a bad guy. If he's still in bed, it's because he's drunk and mean. If he's not in bed, it's most likely because he's at a bar getting drunk and mean.
What's the plan? Lula wanted to know. We gonna just bust in like gangsta bounty hunters and kick his ass?
I looked at Lula. Have we ever done that?
Don't mean we can't.
We look like idiots. We're incompetent.
That's harsh, Lula said. And I don't think we're completely incompetent. I think we're closer to 80% incompetent. Remember the time you wrestled that naked, greased-up fat guy? You did a good job with that one.
Too early in the day to do the pizza delivery routine, I said.
Can't do the flower delivery either. Nobody believes someone sending flowers this dope.
If you hadn't changed clothes, you could do the hooker delivery routine, I said to Lula. He would have opened the door to you and that gold thing.
Maybe we pretend we're selling cookies, like Girl Scouts. All we gotta do is go back to the 7-Eleven and get some cookies.
I looked Johnson's phone number up on the bond sheet and called him from my cell.
Yeah,
a man said. Lonnie Johnson?
What the fuck you want? Fucking bitch calling me at this hour. You think I got nothing better to do than answer this phone?
And he hung up.
Will? Lula asked.
He didn't feel like talking. And he's angry. A shiny black Hummer with tinted windows and bling wheel covers rolled down the street and stopped in front of Johnson's house.
Uh-oh, Lula said. Company.
The Hummer sat there for a moment and then opened fire on Johnson's house. Multiple weapons. At least one was automatic, firing continuous rounds. Windows blew out and the house was drilled with shots. Gunfire was returned from the house, and I saw the nose of a rocket launcher poke out a front window. Obviously, the Hummer saw it, too, because it laid rubber taking off. Maybe this isn't a good time, I said to Lula.
I told you to go for the pervert.
Melvin Pickle worked in a shoe store. The store was part of the mall that attached to the multiplex where he'd been caught shaking hands with the devil. I didn't have a lot of enthusiasm for this capture since I had some sympathetic feelings for Pickle. If I had to work in a shoe store all day, I might go to the multiplex to whack off once in a while, too.
Not only is this going to be an easy catch, Lula said, parking at the food court entrance, but we can get pizza and go shopping.
A half hour later, we were full of pizza and had taken a couple new perfumes out for a test drive. We'd moseyed down the mall and were standing in front of Pickle's shoe store, scoping out the employees. I had a photo of Pickle that had come with his bond agreement.
That's him, Lula said, looking into the store. That's him on his knees trying to sell that dumb woman those ugly-ass shoes.
According to Pickle's paperwork, he'd just turned 40. He had sandy-colored hair that looked like it had been cut in boot camp. His skin was pale, his eyes hidden behind round-rimmed glasses, his mouth accented by a big herpes sore. He was 5'7" and had an average build gone soft. His slacks and dress shirt were just short of shabby. He didn't look like he cared a whole lot if the woman bought the shoes. I moved my cuffs from my shoulder bag to my jeans pocket. I can manage this, I said to Lula. You stay here in case he bolts.
I don't think he looks like a bolter, Lula said. I think he looks more like the Walking Dead.
I agreed with Lula. Pickle looked like he was two steps away from putting a bullet in his brain. I moved behind him and waited for him to stand. I love this shoe, the woman said, but I need a size 9.
I don't have a size 9, Pickle said.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Maybe you should go back and look again. Pickle sucked air for a couple beats and nodded.
Sure,
he said. He stood and turned and bumped into me. You're going to leave, aren't you? I said. I bet you're going to go out the back door and go home and never come back.
It's a recurring fantasy, he said.
I glanced at my watch. It was 12:30. Have you had lunch? I asked him.
No.
Take your lunch now and come with me and I'll buy you a piece of pizza.
There's something wrong with this picture, Pickle said. Are you one of those religious nuts who wants to save me?
No, I'm not a religious nut. I held my hand out. Stephanie Plum. He automatically shook my hand.
Melvin Pickle.
I work for Vincent Plum Bail Bonds, I said. You missed a court date and you need to reschedule.
Sure, he said.
Now.
I can't go now, I gotta work.
You can take your lunch break.
I had plans for lunch.
Probably going to see a movie. I was still holding his hand, and with my other hand I clapped a bracelet on him. He looked down at the cuff.
What's this? You can't do this, people will ask questions. And then what will I tell them? I'll have to tell them I'm a pervert.
Two women looked over at him and raised their eyebrows. No one will care, I said. I turned to the women. You don't care, right? Right, they murmured and hurried out of the store. Just walk out into the mall quietly with me, I said. I'll take you to court and get you rebonded. Actually, Vinny would rebond him. Vinny and Connie could write bond. Lula and I did the capture thing.
Darn, Pickle said. Darn it all.
And he took off, with a cuff dangling from his wrist. Lula stepped in front of him, but he had momentum and knocked her on her ass. He faltered for a moment, got his footing, and ran off into the mall.
I was 10 steps behind him. I stumbled over Lula, scrambled to my feet, and kept going. I chased him through the mall and up an escalator. A hotel with an open atrium was attached to one end of the mall. Pickle ran into the hotel and barreled through the fire door into the stairwell. I chased him up 5 flights of stairs and thought my lungs were going to explode. He exited the stairwell, and I dragged myself, gasping, to the door. There were 7 floors to the hotel. All rooms opened to a hallway that overlooked the hotel atrium. We were on the 6th floor. I staggered out of the stairwell and saw that Pickle had made it halfway around the atrium and was straddling the balcony railing.
"Don't come near me," he yelled. "I'll jump."
"Fine with me," I said. "I get my money, dead or alive." Pickle looked depressed at that fact. Or maybe Pickle just always looked depressed. "You're in pretty good shape," I said, still winded. "How do you stay in such good shape?"
"My car got repossessed. I walk everywhere. And all day long I'm up and down with the shoes. At the end of the day, my knees are killing me."
I was talking to him, creeping closer. "Why don't you get a different job? One that's easier on your knees."
"Are you kidding me? I'm lucky to have this job. Look at me. I'm a loser. And now everybody's gonna know I'm a pervert. I'm a pervert loser, and I have a big herpes. I'm a pervert loser with a herpes."
"You need to get a grip. You don't have to be a pervert loser if you don't want to be." He sat on the railing and swung both legs over.
"Easy for you to say. You aren't named Melvin Pickle. And I bet you were a baton twirler in high school. You probably had friends. You probably date."
"I don't exactly date, but I sort of have a boyfriend."
"What does sort of mean?"
"It means that he looks like my boyfriend, but I don't say it out loud."
"Why not?" Pickle wanted to know.
"It feels weird. I'm not sure why." Okay, I knew why, but I wasn't going to say that out loud either. I had feelings for 2 men, and I didn't know how to choose between them. "And I wish you wouldn't sit like that. It's creeping me out."
"Are you afraid I'll fall? I thought you didn't care, remember, dead or alive?"
My cell phone was ringing in my bag.
"For crying out loud, answer it," Pickles said. "Don't worry about me. I'm only going to kill myself."
I did an exaggerated eye roll and answered the phone.
"Hey," Lula said, "where are you? I've been looking all over."
"I'm in the hotel at the end of the mall."
"I'm right outside of that hotel. What are you doing there? Do you have Pickle?"
"I don't exactly have Pickle. We're on the 6th floor and he's thinking about jumping off the balcony."
I looked over the railing and saw Lula walk into the atrium. She looked up and I waved at her.
"I see you," Lula said. "Tell Pickle he's going to make a big mess if he jumps. This floor is marble and his head's going to crack open like a fresh egg, and there's going to be brains and blood all over the place."
I disconnected and relayed the message to Pickle.
"I have a plan," he said. "I'm going to jump feet first. That way my head won't make such an impact when I land."
Pickle was getting noticed. People were dotted around the atrium looking up at him. The elevator opened behind me and a man in a suit stepped out.
"What's going on here?" he wanted to know.
"Don't come near me," Pickle yelled. "If you come near me, I'll jump."
"I'm the hotel manager," the man said. "Is there something I can do?"
"Do you have a giant net?" I asked him.
"Just go away," Pickle said. "I have big problems. I'm a pervert."
"You don't look like a pervert," the manager said.
"I whacked off in the multiplex," Pickle told him.
"Everybody whacks off in the multiplex," the manager said. "I like to go when there's one of those chick flicks playing, and I wear my wife's panties, and I..."
"Jeez," Pickle said. "Too much information."
The manager disappeared behind the elevator doors, and minutes later reappeared in the lobby. He stood in a small cluster of hotel employees, everyone with their head back, their eyes glued to Pickle.
"You're making a scene," I said to Pickle.
"Yeah," Pickle said. "Pretty soon they're going to start yelling, 'Jump!' The human race is lacking. Have you noticed?"
"There are some good people," I told him.
"Oh, yeah? Who's the best person you know? Of all the people you know personally, is there anyone who has a sense of right and wrong and lives by it?"
This was a sticky question because it would have to be Ranger, but I suspected he occasionally killed people. Only bad people, of course, but still.
The crowd in the atrium was growing, and now included some uniformed security guys and two Trenton cops. One of the cops was on his two-way, probably calling Morelli to tell him I was involved in yet another disaster. A cameraman and his assistant joined the crowd. "We're on television," I told Pickle. Pickle looked down, waved at the camera, and everyone cheered. "This is getting too weird," I told Pickle. "I'm leaving."
"You can't leave. If you leave, I'll jump."
"I don't care, remember?"
"Of course you care. You'll be responsible for my death."
"Oh, no. No, no, no." I wagged my finger at him. "That won't work with me. I grew up in the Berg. I was raised Catholic. I know guilt in and out. The first 30 years of my life were ruled by guilt. Not that guilt is an entirely bad thing, but you're not going to lay it on me. Whether you live or die is your choice. I have nothing to do with it. I'm not taking responsibility for the state of the pot roast anymore."
"Pot roast?"
"Every Friday, I'm expected for dinner at my parents' house. Every Friday, my mom makes pot roast. If I'm late, the pot roast cooks too long and gets dry, and it's all my fault."
"And?"
"And it's not my fault."
"Of course it's your fault. You were late. They were nice enough to make a pot roast for you. Then they were nice enough to hold dinner for you, even though it meant ruining the pot roast. Boy, you should learn some manners."
My cell phone rang again. It was my Grandma Mazur. She lives with my mom and dad. She moved in when Grandpa Mazur sailed off in a heaven-bound gravy boat.
"You're on television," she said. "I was trying to find Judge Judy, and you popped up. They said you were breaking news. Are you trying to rescue that guy on the railing? Are you trying to get him to jump?"
"In the beginning, I was trying to rescue him," I said, "but I'm starting to change my mind."
"I gotta go now," Grandma said. "I gotta call Ruth Biablocki and tell her you're on television. She's always going on about her granddaughter and how she's got that good job at the bank. Well, let's see her top this one. Her granddaughter don't get on television."
"What are you so depressed about that you want to jump off this balcony?" I asked Pickle. "Jumping to your death is pretty severe."
"My life sucks. My wife left me and took everything, including my clothes and my dog. I got fired from my job and had to go work in a shoe store. I have no money, so I had to move back home and live with my mother. And I got caught whacking off in a multiplex. Could it possibly get any worse?"
"You have your health."
"I think I'm getting a cold. I have a huge, oozing cold sore."
My phone rang again.
"Cupcake," Morelli said. "I don't like finding you in a hotel with another guy."
I looked down and saw Morelli standing next to Lula. "He's a jumper," I told Morelli.
"Yeah," Morelli said. "I can see that. What's the story?"
"He got caught whacking off in the multiplex and doesn't want to go to jail."
"You won't get a lot of jail time for that," Morelli said. "Maybe a couple weekends or community service. It's not a big deal. Everyone whacks off in the multiplex."
I relayed the message to Pickle.
"It's not just jail," Pickle said. "It's me. I'm a loser."
Morelli was still on the phone.
"Now what?"
"He's a loser."
"You're on your own with that one," Morelli said. "Are you going to need help with this?"
"Maybe you need vitamins," I said to Pickle. Pickle looked at me, hopeful.
"Do you think that could be it?"
"Yeah. If you get off the railing, we could go to the health food store and get some."
"You're just saying that to get me off the railing."
"True. When you get off the railings, the police will probably arrest you for being a nut. You'll have to go to the station and wait for Vinny to get there to bond you out again."
"I can't afford to get bonded out again. I just walked off my job. I'm probably unemployed."
"Oh, for the love of everything holy." I peeked at my watch. I didn't have time for this. I had other fish to fry. "How about this? We need someone to do filing at the bonds office. Maybe I can get Vinny to hire you so you can work off the fee to get bonded out."
"Really? You do that for me?"
Morelli was still listening in.
"Okay, so far we promised him community service, vitamins, and a job. The only thing left that he could possibly want is gorilla sex. And if you promise that to him, I'm not going to be happy."
I disconnected Morelli and put the phone back into my pocket.
"About the job," Pickle said. "Vinny wouldn't mind that I'm a, you know, pervert."
That was pretty funny. Vinny minding the Pickle whacked off at the multiplex. "It's probably the only thing you have going for you," I told Pickle.
"Okay," he said. "But you're going to have to help me get off this railing. I'm terrified to move."
I grabbed the back of his shirt and hauled him off the railing, and we both collapsed into a heap on the floor. The crowd reaction was mixed, some cheers and some boos. We got to our feet, and I cuffed his hands behind his back and led him to the elevator. Chapter 2 Morelli was waiting for me when the doors opened at the atrium level. He stepped in with two uniforms, and we all rode one floor down to the parking garage where a cruiser was idling. I got Pickle into the back seat and promised to get him rebonded.
"And the vitamins," Pickle said. "Don't forget the vitamins."
"Sure." The cruiser took off, and I turned to Morelli. He was standing, thumbs hooked into his jeans pockets, and he was smiling at me. Morelli is 6 feet tall and is all lean planes and angles and hard muscle. His complexion is Mediterranean. His hair is almost black and curls against his neck. His brown eyes are liquid chocolate when he's aroused. "What?" I asked Morelli.
"Did you make any more promises after you hung up on me?"
"None you want to know about." The smile widened.
"Bob misses you. He hasn't seen you in a couple days."
Bob is Morelli's big orange dog, and this is Morelli's ploy when he wants me to do a sleepover. Not that he needs a ploy. "I have to call you later this afternoon," I said. "I don't know how my day will go. I'm on a mission to clean up a bunch of FTAs for Vinny." He curled his fingers into my t-shirt, pulled me to him, and kissed me. There was a lot of tongue involved and some wandering hands. When he was done, he held me at arm's length.
"Be careful," he said.
"Too late," I told him. He moved me 5 steps backward into the elevator, pushed the button, and sent me up to the atrium where Lula was waiting.
"I'm not even going to guess what went on in that parking garage," Lula said, "but you better wipe that goofy smile off your face or people are going to get the right idea."
I called Connie and told her about Pickle.
"Vinny's out of town," she said. "I'll bond Pickle out. And before I forget, there was a woman in here asking for you. She said her name was Carmen."
Offhand, I couldn't think of anyone I knew named Carmen. "Did she say what she wanted?"
"She said it was personal. I'm guessing she was in her late 20s, soft-spoken, pretty, and crazy."
"Great. What kind of crazy are we talking about? Crazy stressed? Crazy dressed in clown shoes with a red rubber nose? Or crazy crazy?"
"Crazy stressed and crazy crazy. She was dressed all in black, like Ranger. Black boots, black cargo pants, black t-shirt. And she was intense. She said she would track you down. And then she asked about Ranger. I guess she's looking for him, too."
"We got choices to make," Lula said when I put my phone away. "We could cruise for shoes, or we could embarrass ourselves some more by pretending to be bounty hunters."
"I think we're on a roll. I say we keep pretending to be bounty hunters."
"I want to see the woman who stabbed her husband in the ass," Lula said. "Let's do her next."
"She's in the burg," I said to Lula, pulling the file on Mary Lee Truck. "I'll call my mom and see if she knows her." The Berg is a small chunk of Trenton just outside the center of the city. It's a working-class neighborhood that can't keep a secret and takes care of its own. My parents live in the Berg. My best friend Mary Lou Molnar lives in the Berg. Morelli's family is in the Berg. Morelli and I have moved out, but we haven't moved far. Grandma Mazur answered the phone.
"Of course I know Mary Lee Truck," Grandma said. "I play bingo with her mother."
"Does Mary Lee get along with her husband?"
"Not since she stabbed him in the behind. I understand he got real cranky about that and packed up and left."
"Why did she stab him?"
"The story is that she asked him if he thought she was putting on weight, and he said yes, and then she stabbed him. It was one of them spontaneous acts. Mary Lee's going through the change, and everyone knows you don't just up and tell a menopausal woman she's getting fat. I swear, some men have no brains at all. And by the way, I forgot to tell you before, but some woman came to the house this afternoon looking for you. I said I didn't know exactly where you were, and she said that was okay, that she'd find you with or without anyone's help. And she was dressed like that hottie you work with, Ranger."
Lula pulled the Firebird up to the curb, and we sat looking at the truck house.
"I don't have a good feeling about this," Lula said.
"You were the one who wanted to do the butt stabber."
"That was before I knew the menopause story. What if she is a hot flash while we're there and goes Looney Tunes?"
"Just don't turn your back on her, and don't comment on her weight." I got out of the car and walked to the door, and Lula followed. I was about to knock when the door was wrenched open, and Mary Lee glared out at me. She had short brown hair that looked like it had been styled with an electric mixer. She was 52, according to her bond papers. She was a couple inches shorter than me and a couple pounds heavier.
What?
She asked.
Yow,
Lula whispered to me. I introduced myself and gave Mary Lee the routine about getting rebonded.
I can't go with you, she wailed. Look at my hair. I used to be so good with hair, but lately I can't do anything with this mess.
I use conditioner on mine, Lula said. Have you tried that?
We both looked at Lula's hair. It was orangutan orange and the texture of boar bristles. How about a hat? I said.
A hat?
Mary Lee sobbed.
My hair's so bad. I need a hat.
Mary Lee's face got red and she stripped her t-shirt off.
God, it's hot in here.
She was in her bra, sweating and fanning herself with her shirt. Lula put her finger to the side of her head and made circles, the international sign for bats in her belfry.
I saw that,
Mary Lee said, eyes narrowed.
You think I'm nuts? You think the big fatso is nuts?
Lady, you just took your shirt off, Lula said. I used to do that, but I made money on it.
Mary Lee looked at the shirt in her hand.
I don't remember taking it off.
Mary Lee's face wasn't red anymore, and she'd stopped sweating, so I took the shirt and tugged it over her head. I can help you, I said. I know just what you need. I rummaged through my shoulder bag, found my baseball cap, and clapped it onto her head and tucked most of her hair in. I did a fast walk through the house to make sure it was locked up and Mary Lee hadn't accidentally put the cat in the oven, and then Lula and I steered Mary Lee out of the house and into the car. 5 minutes later, I had Mary Lee standing in front of the donut case at the bakery. Okay, take a deep breath and look over all the donuts, I told her. Look at the strawberry donut with the rainbow sprinkles. Doesn't it make you happy? Mary Lee smiled at the donut.
Pretty.
And the meringue that looks like a fluffy cloud, and the birthday cakes with the pink and yellow roses, and the chocolate cream pie.
This is very relaxing,
Mary Lee said. I called Connie's cell phone. Are you still at the courthouse? I asked her. I'm bringing Mary Lee truck in, and we're going to want to bond her out right away before she gets another hot flash.
I hate to break into the moment, Marjorie Lando said, but what'll it be?
A dozen assorted donuts to go. I told her. Lula dropped me off in front of the bond's office.
That wasn't so bad, she said. We helped two lost souls today. That's real good for my horizon expanding and positive karma stockpile. Usually we just piss people off, and that don't do me any good in the karma department. And it's only 5 o'clock. I got plenty of time to get to rehearsal. See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, I said, and I waved Lula away and beeped my car open. I was driving a black and white Mini Cooper that I'd gotten from Honest Dan, the used car man. The interior space was a little cozy for carting bad guys off to jail, but the car had been the right price, and it was fun to drive. I slid behind the wheel and jumped when someone knocked on the driver's side window. It was the woman dressed in black. She was young, maybe early 20s, and she was pretty in a normal kind of way. She had thick, wavy brown hair that fell to her shoulders, blue eyes under long lashes, and full lips that looked like they could easily go pouty. She was maybe 5 feet 5 inches and had a nice shape with brown breasts stretching the fabric of her black t-shirt. I started the car and rolled the window down. You wanted to speak to me? I asked the woman. The woman looked in the window at me.
You're Stephanie Plum?
Yes, and you would be...
My name is Carmen Minoso, she said. I'm Ranger's wife.
My stomach went into a free fall. If I'd been hit in the head with a baseball bat, I wouldn't have been more stunned. I suppose I had to assume there were women in Ranger's life, but I'd never seen any women. There'd never been mention of any women. And there had never been evidence of any women, much less a wife. Ranger was a very sexy guy, but he was also a lone wolf.
I understand you're sleeping with my husband,
the woman said. You're misinformed, I told her. Okay, once. But it was a while ago, and she put the accusation into present tense.
You were living with him.
I used his apartment as a safe house.
I don't believe you,
the woman said.
Where is he now? Is he in your apartment? I've been to his office and he isn't there.
Keep calm, I told myself. This doesn't feel right. This woman could be anyone. I'm going to need some identification, I said to the woman. She reached into a pocket on her black cargo pants and pulled out a slim credit card holder. It contained a Virginia driver's license issued to Carmen Minoso, plus two credit cards also issued to Carmen Minoso. So this told me she was Carmen Minoso. It still didn't confirm that she was Ranger's wife. How long have you been married to Ranger? I asked her.
Almost 6 months. I knew he had an office here and that he spent a lot of time here. I never had reason to think he was cheating. I trusted him, until now.
And you don't trust him now, why?
He moved out, like a thief in the night, cleaned out our bank account and stripped the office of all the files and computer equipment.
When did this happen?
Last week. One minute he was in bed with me telling me he was returning to Trenton in the morning, and then poof, gone. His cell phone no longer in service.
I punched Ranger's number into my cell phone and got his message service. Call me, I said. Carmen's eyes narrowed.
I knew you'd have a number for him, bitch!
And she reached behind her and drew a gun. I stomped on the gas and the Mini sprang off the curb and jumped forward. Carmen fired off two shots. One pinged off my rear fender. Connie was right. Carmen Minoso was crazy. And maybe I was crazy, too, because I was lost in a rush of insane emotions, not the least of which was jealousy. Yikes. Who would have thought that was hiding in the closet? Stephanie Plum, jealous of a woman claiming to be Ranger's wife. And the jealousy was mixed with anger and hurt feelings that this was kept from me, that Ranger had misrepresented himself, that this man I respected for his integrity and strength of character might be not at all what he'd seemed. Okay, take a deep breath, I told myself. Don't go all hormonal. Get the facts straight. Have a mental donut. I live in a no-frills three-story apartment building that is for the most part inhabited by the newlywed and the nearly dead, except for me. I live on the second floor with my apartment windows looking out onto the parking lot. Handy for those times when I need to keep watch over my car because some pissed-off woman might be inclined to take an axe to it. The building is in a convenient location a couple miles from the bond office, and, more important, just a couple miles from my mom's washer and dryer. I rolled into the lot, parked, and got out to look at the damage. It wasn't bad, all things considered. A line slicing through the paint. A ding on point of impact. Considering that I once had a car smooshed by a garbage truck, this hardly counted. I locked up and went into the building. Mrs. Bessler was in the elevator. She was in her 80s, and her own personal elevator didn't quite go all the way to the top anymore.
Going up,
she sang out to me. Second floor, I said. She pushed the button and smiled at me.
Second floor, ladies' lingerie and better dresses. Watch your step, dear.
I thanked Mrs. Bessler for the ride and got out of the elevator. I walked the length of my hall and let myself into my apartment. One bedroom, one bath, kitchen, dining room, and living room. All beige, none of my choosing, redecorated by the building owner after an apartment fire. Beige walls, beige carpet, beige curtains. Total 70s orange and brown bathroom. My luck, the fire didn't destroy the bathroom. My hamster Rex lives in a glass cage on my beige kitchen counter. He poked his head out of a soup can when I came in. His whiskers twitched, and his black button eyes were wide in expectation. I said hello and dropped a couple Cheerios into his food dish. He rushed out, shoved the Cheerios into his mouth, and disappeared into his soup can. My kind of roommate. I called Morelli and told him I'd be over in an hour. I took a shower, did the hair and makeup thing, put on some pretty undies, clean jeans, and a sexy little knit shirt, and checked my messages. No Ranger. This was a dilemma. I didn't know what to do about Carmen. My instincts told me she wasn't what she said. My curiosity had me in a state, and my hormones still had me a teensy jealous. Probably I wouldn't be bothered so much if she wasn't so pretty. Truth is, she looked like a woman Ranger might find attractive, except for the crazy part. I couldn't see Ranger with an irrational woman. Ranger was organized. Ranger didn't act on impulse. Anyway, here she was, and I seemed to be in the middle of something. Whether or not she was Ranger's wife wasn't my most pressing problem. The fact that Carmen felt comfortable shooting at me put her beyond the nuisance category and into the yikes category. I was supposed to call Tank if I needed help, but I wasn't ready to push that button just yet. If Tank thought I was in danger, he'd assign someone to follow me around whether I wanted it or not. My experience with Ranger's men is that this isn't desirable. They're big and hard to hide, And they're overly protective, since the fear is that Ranger might shoot them in the foot should they let anything bad happen to me. I stuffed a change of clothes into my shoulder bag and locked my apartment up behind me. I headed out and did a fast check on my car before getting in. No spray-painted slogans suggesting I was a slut. Windows hadn't been broken by a sledgehammer. No ticking noises coming from the undercarriage. Looked to me like Carmen hadn't yet discovered my address. I drove the short distance to Morelli's house and parked at the curb. Morelli lived in a pleasant neighborhood with narrow streets, small attached houses, and hardworking people. I spent enough time here that knocking wasn't a required formality. I let myself in and heard Bob galloping at me from the kitchen. He hurled himself against me, tail wagging, eyes bright. Bob was, in theory, a golden retriever, but his gene pool was questionable. He was big and orange and fluffy. He loved everybody, and he ate everything, including table legs and upholstered chairs. I gave him a hug. He realized I didn't have any bakery bags, and he trotted away. Morelli didn't gallop at me, but he didn't drag his feet either. He met me halfway to the kitchen, pressed me into the wall, plastered himself against me, and kissed me. Morelli was off duty in jeans and a t-shirt and bare feet, and the only weapon Morelli was currently carrying was pressed into my stomach.
"Bob really missed you," he said, his mouth moving down my neck.
"Bob?"
"Yeah."
He hooked a finger into my shirt and slid it off my shoulder so his mouth could kiss more of me.
"Bob's been nuts without you."
"Sounds serious."
"Fucking pathetic."
His hand slid down to my waist under my shirt, and in an instant, the shirt was off.
"You aren't hungry, are you?"
he asked. "Not for what's in the kitchen." I was dressed in one of Morelli's shirts and a pair of his sweatpants. I was beside Morelli on his couch, and we were eating cold pizza and watching a ball game. "I had an interesting experience today," I told him. "A woman introduced herself to me as Ranger's wife, and then she pulled a gun on me and got 2 rounds off at my car."
"Am I supposed to be surprised at this?"
There's a certain amount of professional respect between Morelli and Ranger, and from time to time they've worked together for the common good. Beyond that, Morelli thinks Ranger's a head case. "Do you know anything about this woman?" I asked Morelli.
"No."
"Ranger left for Miami today. Do you know anything about that?"
"No."
"Do you know anything about anything?"
"I know a few things," Morelli said. "Tell me more about Ranger's wife."
"Her name is Carmen. I saw a Virginia driver's license issued to Carmen Minoso and 2 credit cards. She's pretty, sort of curly brown hair, blue eyes, about 5'5", Caucasian, nice shape, fake boobs."
"How do you know the boobs are fake?"
"Actually, I'm just hoping they're fake. And she was dressed in black SWAT clothes."
"That's cute,"
Morelli said.
"Mr. and Mrs. Ranger clothes."
"She said 1 minute they were in bed, and then poof, he was gone. Cleaned out the bank account and emptied the office, and the cell number she has for him is out of service."
"And your cell number for him?"
"It's in service, but he's not answering."
"It doesn't work for me," Morelli said. "I can't see Ranger tying himself up in a marriage."
I happen to know that Ranger had been married for about 20 minutes when he was Special Forces. He has a 10-year-old daughter from that marriage, and the daughter lives in Miami with her mother and stepfather. So far as I know, he's been careful to avoid entanglement since. At least, that's what I believed until a couple hours ago. "Who is this woman if she's not his wife?" I asked.
"Whacked out bimbo, paid assassin, demented relative."
"Get serious."
"I am serious."
"Okay, different subject. Did you do the report on Melvin Pickle? Do you know his status?"
"Oswald did the report. Pickle shouldn't have any problem getting rebonded. Probably have to go through some kind of mental health screening."
Morelli eyed the last piece of pizza.
"Do you want it?"
he asked. "You can have it," I told him, "but it'll cost you."
"What's the price?"
"How about running Carmen Minoso through the system?"
"I'd need more than a piece of pizza for that," Morelli said. "I'd need a night of balls-to-the-wall sex."
"You're going to get that anyway," I told him. Morelli was already out of the house when I dragged myself down the stairs and into the kitchen. I gave Bob a hug, scooped some coffee into the coffee maker, added water, pushed the button, and listened to the magical gurgle of coffee brewing. Morelli had a loaf of raisin bread out on the counter. I considered toasting a slice, but it seemed like unnecessary work, so I ate a slice raw. I drank my coffee and read the paper Morelli left behind. "Gotta go to work," I said to Bob, pushing back from the table. Bob didn't look like he cared a lot. Bob had found a patch of sun on the kitchen floor and was soaking it up. I showered and got dressed in clean jeans and a little knit shirt. I swiped some mascara on my lashes and took off. I had two files pulled from the pack on the seat next to me. Leon James, the arsonist, and Lonnie Johnson, both high bonds. I drove the short distance to Hamilton and parked in front of the office. I got out of the Mini and looked across the street at the black SUV with Virginia plates and tinted windows. Carmen was on the job. I stuck my head into the office. Lula was on the couch reading a Movie Star magazine. Connie was at her desk. "How long's the SUV been across the street?" I asked.
"It was there when I opened the office," Connie said.
"Anybody come in to say hello?"
"Nope."
I turned and walked across the street and rapped on the driver's side window of the SUV. The window rolled down, and Carmen looked out at me.
"Looks to me like you spent the night with someone," she said. "Like maybe you spent the night with my husband."
"I spent the night with my boyfriend, not that it's any of your business."
"I'm gonna stick to you like nothing you've ever seen. I know you're gonna lead me to the son of a bitch, and when I find him, I'm gonna kill him, and then I'm gonna kill you."
Carmen Minoso had said this with eyes narrowed and teeth clenched. And I realized that the jealousy I felt over her and Ranger was nothing compared to the jealousy she felt toward me. Like it or not, fact or fiction, I was the other woman. "Maybe we should talk this over," I said. "There are some things that don't add up for me. Maybe I can help you, and I have a couple questions." The gun appeared, pointed at a spot in the middle of my forehead.
"I'm not answering any more questions," Carmen said.
I stepped to the rear of the SUV and got the plate. Then I hustled across the street and into the office.
"Well?"
Connie asked. "It's Carmen, the woman in black. She claims to be Ranger's wife. I've seen her driver's license. It reads Carmen Minoso. Her story is that he walked out on her last week, and she's looking for him."
"Holy crap," Lula said.
Connie started punching information into her computer.
"Do you know anything else? Address?"
"Arlington. I didn't see her driver's license long enough to get more," I told her. "And I have the plate." I scribbled it on a piece of paper for her. "Supposedly Ranger had an office in the area, closed it without warning, and disappeared." This is the age of instant access. Connie had computer programs that pulled everything from credit history to medical history to high school grades and movie preferences. Connie could find out if you were constipated in 1994.
"Here she is," Connie said. "Carmen Minoso, 22 years old, maiden name Carmen Cruz, married to Ricardo Carlos Minoso, blah, blah, blah. I don't see anything especially interesting. She's originally from Lanham, Maryland, and then Springfield, Virginia. No children, no history of mental illness, no criminal history that I can see. Unimpressive work history, mostly in retail sales. Waited tables at a bar in Springfield, and most recently lists herself as self-employed bounty hunter. Some financial information. The SUV is leased, lives in a rental in Arlington. I can go deeper, but it'll take a day or two."
"What about Ranger? Can you run a check on him?"
"Connie and me try to run a check on him all the time," Lula said. "It's like he doesn't exist."
I looked at Connie. "Is that true?"
"I'm surprised his name showed up in Carmen's database," Connie said. "He has a way of erasing himself."
I redialed Ranger's cell number and got his service again. "Hey, man of mystery," I said. "Your wife is here, and she's looking for you with a gun in her hand."
"That would get my attention," Lula said.
"Only if you were near a cell tower," I told her. "And sometimes Ranger goes places where no cell tower has gone before. Let's saddle up. I want to see what Lonnie Johnson's house looks like today. See if anyone's shooting at him." Lula's Firebird was parked in the small back lot, so we left through the back door and took her car. After a couple blocks, I called Connie.
"Is Carmen still at the curb?"
"Yep, she didn't see your rear exit. Guess bounty hunter skills aren't high on the list of things you'll learn when you're married to Ranger."
I hung up, and Lula cruised down Hamilton and hooked a right turn into Johnson's neighborhood. We were a block away when we saw the lone fire truck. It was parked in front of Johnson's house, or at least what was left of it.
"Huh," Lula said, creeping in for a closer look. "Hope he had insurance."
Johnson's house was a pile of blackened rubble. I got out of the car and walked to the fire truck where two firemen were checking a form off on a clipboard.
"What happened?" I asked.
"The house burned down," one of them said.
They looked at each other and laughed. fireman humor. Anyone hurt?
No, everyone got out. Are you a friend?
I knew Lonnie Johnson. Do you know where he went?
No, but he went there fast. Left his girlfriend behind to sort through the mess. She said it was a kitchen fire, but there was no way.
How about this? Maybe the firebomb landed in the kitchen. I got back into the car and slouched in my seat.
Look on the bright side, Lula said. Nobody's shooting, and I don't see no rocket launcher.
Chapter 3 I think we'll file Lonnie Johnson in the Lost Cause file, I said to Lula. If he has any sense at all, he's on a bus out of town.
Good idea, Lula said. Who we got next up?
I planned to do the arsonist next, but he lost some appeal now that I had my nose clogged with barbecued house. I got the stack of files from the back seat and fingered through them. Louise Queen had been picked up for solicitation. Not a high bond, but he'd be easy to find. I hauled Louise Queen in all the time. Unfortunately, it was too early for Queen. He wouldn't be on his corner turning tricks until mid-afternoon. Queen liked to sleep in. Caroline Scarzoli held some potential. She was a low-bond shoplifter, first-time offender, worked in a lingerie and gadget shop. I handed the file to Lula. How about this one?
I like this one, Lula said. Scarzoli will be at work now, and I've been wanting to take a look at this store. I gave up being a hoe, but I still like to keep up on the technology.
Pleasure Treasures was on a side street in the middle of the city. The name on the front of the store was written in hot pink neon light. The lingerie displayed in the window was exotic. Crotchless panties trimmed in faux fur, sequin thongs, nipple pasties, animal print garter belts. Lula parked in the small lot adjacent to the store, and we sauntered up to the front door. Actually, Lula was the only one sauntering. I was skulking, head down, hoping no one was looking. An older woman walked by with her dog, and our eyes met. I'm a bounty hunter looking for someone, I said to her. I'm not buying anything here. I've never even been here before. The woman hurried on, and Lula shook her head at me.
That is so sad, Lula said. That shows low self-esteem. That shows you got no pride in your sexual side. You should have told that woman you were going in to get a vibrator and edible massage oils. This here's the 21st century. Just because we're women don't mean we can't be sick as men.
It's not the 21st century in the burg. My mother would get an eye twitch if she heard I was shopping in the Pleasure Treasures.
Yeah, but I bet your Grandma Mazza shops here all the time, Lula said, walking into the store,
going into browse mode.
Look at all those dildos. A whole wall of dildos.
Lula picked one off a shelf and pushed a button, and it started to hum and rotate.
This here's a good one, she said. It can sing and dance.
I had no frame of reference for dildos. Yeah, I said, it's nice.
It ain't nice, Lula said, obviously impressed. It's a nasty bugger.
That's what I meant. Nice and nasty. She handed me the dancing dildo.
Here, you hold it for me while I look around. I want to check out the DVD selection.
I followed Lula to the DVDs.
They got a good selection, Lula said. They got all the classics like Debbie Does Dallas and Horny Little People. And here's my personal favorite, Big Boys. Have you seen Big Boys?
I shook my head no.
You gotta see Big Boys. It'll change your life. I'm gonna buy Big Boys for you.
That's okay, I don't...
It's a present for me.
She handed me the DVD.
Hang on to it while I keep looking.
We're supposed to be working, I said. Remember how we came in here to apprehend Caroline Scarzoli?
Yeah, but that's her over there behind the counter, and she don't look like she's going anywhere. She looks just like her picture. I bet she's wearing a wig. Don't it look like a wig to you?